welcome. As always, even though we are under the Two Generations Gaming banner, this is One Guy Reading. Whether you meant to or not, you found Noob's Book Club. I'm Sean, noob of all trades from Two Generations Gaming, and in this series I am reading and reacting to Ready Player One, the novel by Ernest Cline. I lied last time. I said it was the penultimate episode. This is actually the penultimate episode because I intend on doing a finale when we get back from Germany in July. So I promise it wasn't just because I wanted to say penultimate twice, or probably like four or five times at this point. Anyway, in this episode, I will be reading and reacting to the final three chapters, chapter 37, chapter 38, and chapter 39. Chapter 37. Wade ends up in a quote-unquote vast, dark, empty space. No walls or ceiling that he can see, but a floor that he's standing on. He has no idea what to do. A disembodied voice answers his unasked question. Quote, beat the high score or be destroyed. Quote, the game? Tempest. Crap. He's not that great with that one. Artemis pulls some BDE on him. Quote, I must uneasy make, lest too light winning make the prize light. It's from the Shakespeare play, The Tempest. Wade rightfully feels dumb. She flexes harder by mentioning that the game also shows up in a Rush video. Shoto is suitably impressed. The score he needs to beat? 728,329. The initials? JDH. James Donovan Holloway. The catch? Only one credit. He tries the quarter that he got from the Perfect Pac-Man game. No dice. Tokens only. No way he's going to do this on one credit. Artemis again saves the day. Apparently, dying with a certain score triggered a bug in the earliest release of the game. That bug rewarded you with a bunch of extra credits. Wade feels further embarrassed. H is impressed. The score? Well, it's a bit of a process. Well, first you get over 180,000, then you die with the last two digits of 0, 6, 11, or 12. Are you sure you're sure, he asks. Yep. Well, here goes nothing. Wade gets above 180,000, then kills himself at 189,412. He types in his initials, W-O-W. The credits jump from 0 to 40. They all cheer. Artemis then gives him, are you fucking kidding me about his initials, W-O-W? He jokes that it stands for obtuse, then tells her it's actually Owen. His next score, 219,584. Shoto initially cringes and gives him a bit of the tough love. He then softens and gives him an attaboy, keep going at it. Artemis tells him a story about the origins of the game. Her voice calms him. She keeps up the encouragement. He gets to 437,977 with only one attempt left. They tell him two things at this point. One, the Sixers made it in and they're working to beat him. Because of the three rule, only 18 out of the 20. B, apparently when someone enters the third gate, it broadcasts a feed out to the entire Oasis. That 1BA2, it's much funnier when you have more than two, but I figured I'd go with it anyway. Well, with all of that, he locks in. An hour later, after beating level 81, he hears them cheer. He did it. Stubbornly, he tries for the highest score. Artemis again brings him back. He dies. Well done, Parzival. Prepare for stage two. He vanishes and reappears galloping up a fog-covered hillside. When he looks around, he isn't on a horse, though. He wears chainmail and has his hands in front of him as if riding a horse. But, again, no horse. Just a guy with some coconuts. Yep, he's in Monty Python and the Holy Grail. He works through the simulation to the Knights of Nee, then asks for an update on the Sixers. 15 still on Tempest, 3 in the movie with him, 1, parenthetically, probably Sorrento, only 9 minutes behind. Imperfect on the dialogue so far. Shit. He keeps working. H keeps updating. He finishes, expecting a third stage. First the end credits music, then, congratulations, you reached the end. Ready Player One. He finds himself in a room, set up like a museum hall. All manner of computers and game systems, in order of origin. The room is a recreation of Halliday's office. He tries the exit even though he knows better. No dice. So, he thinks about the first riddle. Three hidden keys open three secret gates. Wherein the errant will be tested for worthy traits. And those with the skill to survive these straits will reach the end where the prize awaits. The egg must be in here somewhere. Chapter 38. Do you see this, guys? Halliday must have shut off outside comms for the final stage. First he tries the 2600, then the Apple II. Neither of them power on. The only one that does is the MSAI 8080 from War Games. Log in, the screen says. Anorak. Halliday. Og. Kira. Parents' names. Zaphod is fish. Tiberius is ferret. All gave identification, not recognized. Connection terminated. Then he remembered a story told to him by Og that Halliday only ever spoke to Kira in character to her character. Lucosia. Every system in the room lights up. He goes to the 2600, finds a copy of Adventure, and boots it up. He goes through the whole process to find the secret room. Instead of the original Easter egg, he sees Halliday's egg. He moves his character over to grab it, and the joystick in his hand is replaced by an egg. The exit doors turns into the gate exit. When he walks through, further transforms into a wooden door. In the door, a spiral staircase to the top of Anorak's tower in his study. He looks from the tower at the scenery. Everything is back from the devastation of the catalyst. Looking around in the room, he sees a pedestal which will fit the egg exactly. You win, a voice from behind. He turns to see Anorak. Congratulations. Wade, skeptical, receives assurance that it's real, and he won. He takes Anorak's hand in congratulations. Lightning arcs between them. Anorak becomes Halliday. Pale, middle-aged, wearing jeans and a Space Invaders t-shirt. Wade now wears the robe of Anorak. He has near infinite power and infinite level and health. His credits stretch over 12 digits. Halliday officially welcomes him as caretaker of the Oasis. Then he walks over to the bookshelf, pulls on a book, and it reveals the big red button in all caps. One press, and it's all over. Don't press it unless you're sure. And now I want to read a passage from the book. This is the first time that I've done it, but it's a good passage, and I think that it sums everything up nicely. Halliday slid the bookshelf back into place, concealing the button once again. Then he startled me by putting his arm around my shoulders. Listen, he said, adopting a confidential tone. I need to tell you one last thing before I go. Something I didn't figure out for myself until it was already too late. He led me over to the window and motioned out at the landscape stretching out beyond it. I created the Oasis because I never felt at home in the real world. I didn't know how to connect with the people there. I was afraid for all of my life, right up until I knew it was ending. That was when I realized, as terrifying and painful as reality can be, it's also the only place where you can find true happiness, because reality is real. Do you understand? With that, Halliday bids farewell, disappears, and leaves Wade. Good luck, Parzival, and thanks. Thanks for playing my game. They all congratulate him when they're able to chat again. They lost him in the museum, then saw everything with Halliday up until the admission of getting too involved in the virtual. He says he'll tell them later what was said. The scoreboard now only shows Parzival wins with a picture of him in the robes with the egg. Reporters are on the way. The Sixers? Who knows? The vid feed vanishes after he won. Because he can now teleport, he checks them out. They all got ejected from the gate after he won. His friends all seem suitably impressed by his powers and then ask him about his wish. He wishes for their resurrection. When they all log back in, Artemis is missing. She went outside for some fresh air. More good news. A headline reading, Top IOI Executive Sorrento Accused of Murder. Wade remarks that he will probably walk because they can afford the best lawyers. H reminds him that they can now too. Chapter 39. He steps out of the rig. Greeted by Og, he assures Wade that H is correct and they have their own team of lawyers. H and Shoto are still logged in doing a presser online. Wade asks about Artemis. Og points him in the right direction. He makes it outside and remarks that it's a beautiful day out. He wanders through the hedge maze until he realizes that it is set up like the adventure maze. He then makes his way to the center. She sits on a bench, looking at a fountain. He goes around in front of her. She averts her gaze. He calls her beautiful. She takes a compliment and returns an insult. They laugh, breaking the tension, and then fall into a conversation. He calls back to her hippie plan to save the world. She digs back with his spaceship. He professes love. She rebuffs with, quote, we just met, unquote. They discuss her leaving for a time. He understands that it was the right thing to do. And after all, they won, so you know, results-oriented and all. He promises to take it slow. She professes how much she missed him. They hold hands for a while. She kisses him. One last time, he gives some terrible metaphors. He ends the whole thing by saying that for the first time, he doesn't want to log back into the Oasis. Finn. And now for my reaction. So, without planning, I actually planned pretty damn well. While the end doesn't explicitly belong to, quote, hating what you once loved, quote, Wade finds something, parenthetically someone, that he loves more than the thing he once loved. Again, I fully acknowledge that as a white guy, I probably have no idea how women feel when confronted with a story like this. As with most things I don't understand, I've done some research, but that pales in the face of actual experience. With all of that being said, I have a difficult time seeing this as anything more than a cute love story with the expected awkwardness of a teenage boy. The main complaint about quote-unquote male gaze falls flat to me. Again, I feel like Klein maybe put more of him into Artemis's character than Wade, in actuality, but I might just be projecting there. And all the other complaints feel like piling on. We already talked about quote-unquote gatekeeping and others. Well, I got to the Monty Python scene. And one of the critiques I read basically came to the conclusion, quote, can you imagine? Quoting Monty Python to save the world? How ridiculous, unquote. I think the scene went on too long, and I did skip much of it. But again, it's Klein doing the opposite of gatekeeping. He's sharing something he loves. If you've never experienced it, he says, here's a bit. If you like this, check out the rest. I joked that All I Really Want by Alanis Morissette kind of gives people the full Alanis experience, so if they've never experienced Alanis before, play that song for them. If you like it, you're in for a treat. If not, then I'd probably tread lightly. That seems like that's what Klein is doing here with Monty Python. I mean, I'm obviously biased because I enjoyed the hell out of this book. But the trials inspired me to put together a quote-unquote In the Footsteps of Wade series, where I go through the trials myself to experience some of the things I never did before. But the reaction of the book just mirrors our society now. I thought that it might be, quote, nostalgia fatigue, unquote. I have no idea what, parenthetically, if any, the actual term is, but it stems from people remembering that something makes them feel a certain way when younger. Then, when they experience that thing again when older, the feeling is muted. Because this thing is no longer new or special, and they can't replicate that feeling from all those years ago. And, nope, that's exactly what it is. I mean, for sure, in the case of Star Wars fans, parenthetically, who are the worst for this, they cling to the originals as some paragon of storytelling. Hell, even the man who created them realized how lacking his vision and the special effects of the time were, and kept tinkering with them to make them look better and have the story flow better. Then people shit on the prequels. I never had a problem with them, honestly. But seeing them through my kids' eyes, that they consider them definitive Star Wars, it makes me appreciate them even more. And now with the sequels and TV shows, people again mercilessly criticize with no real criticism. Stupid shit like forced diversity are their complaints. Now, we see this happening with Marvel, other than Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, which admittedly is the best of the recent movies. People tore apart Ant-Man and Doctor Strange. I guess I just remember some of the earlier films way before Infinity War and Endgame, and some of them just weren't great movies. So they have to rebuild this universe before the next masterpieces, and there's going to be some bumps in the road like there were before. Does nobody remember Thor the Dark World? Probably not, because nobody ever watched it for a second time, if they ever watched it for a first time. That movie is awful. Anyhow, moving on. I mean, hell, I just saw someone argue that Endgame is not that great a movie and really can't stand alone from Infinity War, which is far superior. This may just be a difference of opinion, but I've watched Endgame at least half a dozen times and Infinity War twice. The only reason I watched it the second time was because we were doing a whole walkthrough with Christine before we got to Endgame. Knowing my people, though, they turn on their own, and sometimes they turn quickly. I just can't relate. I enjoy everything Star Wars, just on different levels and for different reasons. I love everything, parenthetically. Okay, not everything. The latest Spider-Man comic arc is garbage, close parentheses. Other than that, I love everything Marvel, and I can't wait to see how the next chapter of the movies and TV shows plays out. I want Magic the Gathering to continue pushing and progressing their game. Other than the OGL fiasco, I think that Hasbro money brought out the best in D&D too. Y'all can be y'all self, but don't expect me to join the parade. And with all that, thanks for listening one last time on this series, until I get to the finale, when we get back from Germany. If you haven't already, you can find us at www.twoguysgaming.net. We have articles and a link to our socials, including our YouTube, where I'm doing a daily RPG calendar. But I won't be doing it daily when we're in Germany, so I'll have to do some catch-up when we get back. You can also check our Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, which aren't as active as they could be, but I'll try to take some time while we're in Germany to figure out how to make them more active. I won't talk to you again until July. When we get back from Germany, talk to you then. Bye, guys.
We are Two Guys Gaming.